Adam Williams here, bringing you another edition of the Lions Den podcast, this time from inside the Asheville Taurus clubhouse. We're sitting here with the voice of the Asheville Taurus, but also the voice of the Mars Hill Lions, Doug Maurer. Doug, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Adam. I'm good. I'm glad you're able to experience the home clubhouse here. Not a lot of people have access to this room, but this is where it all goes down. And you know, I actually had a chance to check out the new facility at Mars Hill, and I'm sure you guys have a very nice clubhouse as well, or locker room, and a lot goes on here for the performance to come out on the field, so it's cool we're in here.
Yeah, and the Ammons Family Fieldhouse, we've talked about it all year long with head coach Tim Clifton and Coach Newsom and all the coaches that are over there, and again, I appreciate the VIP access today. We see the press box quite a bit in the summer, and as always, it's a pleasure working with you guys in the summer, but here in the fall, as you said, things are kind of quieted down. Clubhouse is cleaned out. Working with the tourists, what's the focus in the off season for the front office?
Sure, and that's probably the most common question that we receive in the off season. What do you guys do in the off season? And actually, we do put in a lot of work. Now, it's not quite as hectic as during the season when you have games every day and you're preparing for a 12, 14-hour day, sometimes even longer. And these homestands, they're 4 to 7 to 8 consecutive days. But you're still putting in a 40-hour work week, getting everything ready for next year, reaching out to clients, a lot of time spent on the phones, making sure that we have all of our sponsors set up for next year. And we actually just had our planning session yesterday for putting together all of our upcoming promotions for next year, specific theme nights, different daily promotions. You know, many people know the Thirsty Thursday around here, and there are a lot of other daily promotions that we work on. And in addition to that, just bettering the experience for fans. So a lot goes into the off season, and it's one of those times of the year where you feel like you have a chance to catch your breath a little bit. You can do a couple of other things, but at the same time, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done so you can be prepared come next April.
Say, I feel like we relate quite well on that, because I think I just got out of that period, and now we're in the fall where everything's busy, everything's hectic, you're putting in those hours. I do want to talk more about the responsibilities in season a little later on, but before we delve any further, let's give the Lions fans a little bit of a background on who is Doug Maurer.
Sure. Well, I've been in Asheville for almost 10 years now. Growing up, I grew up in Indiana. I was a big Indiana Hoosiers fan. That's where I went to school and did my undergrad. And as a kid, I was very big into sports. College basketball was kind of king in the state of Indiana, but I'm obviously well-versed in other sports. I played baseball. I played soccer. And that was sort of my best sport, went the furthest there. I even played a year of high school football as well, and so always been a big sports guy. As far as the area of Asheville, Western North Carolina goes, when I was younger, I was fortunate enough to come out here and go to camp every year. So I fell in love with the mountains. The camp was actually in Hendersonville, but just the area as a whole, and I loved it so much I went back 6 consecutive years and had some of the best memories of my life at camp. And so I think that was a big reason in what drew me back to this area, that and an opportunity to work for a great organization, the Taurus, and help out with, so many other, entities, whether it was a college or a high school, and being around sports, which is what I love. So as far as my background goes, that's kind of me in a nutshell. I like I said, big IU fan. I still consider Indiana to be home. My family is still there. I put a lot of roots down there. But the Asheville area is quickly catching up as second home.
Now, as you're at IU or even in high school, or really, when did the love for broadcasting come into play? When was that when you What clicked really when you said, that's what I want
to
do?
When I was probably about 4 or 5 years old, to be honest. You know, some people have a dream as a kid. You know, I want to be a firefighter or a, you know, pro basketball player, whatever it is. My dream was to be a broadcaster, sports broadcaster. And my grandparents would always tell me, you're going to do so great at this. You know, you know the games. And I mean, I was a little kid. They were probably just telling me what I wanted to hear. But it resonated with me. I think the biggest determination for me was knowing that I wanted to work in sports. Once I knew that, whether it was broadcasting, whether it was sales, promotions, whatever the position was, I wanted to be around sports. And it just so happened to work out to where I was able to do broadcasting, which was my childhood dream. But there were a few things that happened to me when I was a kid that just absolutely stuck with me. The one that I remember the most is, I think I was in second or third grade, and they had the NCAA basketball tournament in the city of Indianapolis. It was downtown at the old RCA Dome where the Colts used to play. Now it's Lucas Oil Stadium. But they were hosting the first round games, and you know they have 4 games in one day. It's a very long day of basketball. Well, my older cousins came to my elementary school, pulled me out of school, and took me downtown, and I watched 3 of the 4 games. And the third game ended, and I'm having an absolute blast. And the fourth game wasn't going to start till, you know, 10:30 at night. And they said, all right, you know, you're 8, 9 years old. We should probably take you home. And I refused. I refused to leave. I said, we have to watch the fourth game. Well, the fourth game just so happened to be the defending national champion UCLA Bruins in a first-round matchup against the Princeton Tigers. And I sat there and I watched that game, and it was close the whole way. And the longer it was close, the more and more the crowd started cheering for Princeton. And the game came down to the final possession. Princeton had the ball down by 1, and they'd been running this back cut play all game. Sure enough, everyone in the stadium knew it was coming. They hit a back cut, hit the layup, and go up on UCLA by 1 with a few seconds left, and ended up pulling the upset. It was one of the greatest upsets in NCAA tournament history. And I stayed. I made sure I wanted to stay for that, and I'm so glad that I did, because that was my first taste in how amazing sports can be for anyone. You know, an underdog, a fan, coach, player, didn't matter. Just to be in that environment was huge. And so that's something that stuck with me. And then with broadcasting, I was able to meet with some broadcasters and get a little bit of an idea of some of the cool things that go along with that. And I can talk about that a little later. But it just sort of all came together. Once I got my foot in the door in sports, I was able to find a good home here in Nashville.
Well, I think it's interesting, too, because I was the same way. I was really young when I realized, like, yeah, what I'm watching on TV is awesome, but what I'm hearing is just as exciting. Mm-hmm. Mine was a little different. I'm a big pro wrestling guy. Uh-huh. That's my thing. So okay. Anytime anyone asks, I always go Jim Ross.
Yep.
Jim Ross, his excitement back in the late 90s, early 2000s, that's what got me hooked. And I remember, I think it was either my birthday or Christmas one year, my parents got me one of those WWF at the time, uh-huh. WWE microphones.
Yeah.
I wore the batteries out in that thing. And I would press mute on the TV and I would just call the action. And then I would start watching baseball games, I'd start watching hockey games and start doing the same thing. And I think that's when the love hit. And I was in college. I want to say it was my sophomore year is when I started to see more of a media relations aspect to it. And that's what I want to transition to here is, we both have a mutual love of broadcasting, but what about media relations drew you into it?
Yeah, that's something that as I spent more and more time here with the tourists, I've really been able to grow in. You know, that's not something you can just necessarily pick up and you're going to have all the answers. It takes some experience. It takes some successful dealings, and it takes some unsuccessful ones. First year full-time here with the tourists, we had a second baseman by the name of Russell Wilson, who's now the quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks. And Russell Wilson had 1 year of college eligibility left when he played here. Now, he was being paid to play for the tourists. So if he was going to go back and play in college, he was going to have to forfeit his signing bonus. But that was something that was on the table. And everyone in the media knew it, not just locally, but nationally as well. 3 years at NC State, he had one more year. Well, everyone knew that NC State had moved on, and if Russell Wilson was going to go back to college and play football, it was going to be with a different school. So our season's going along, and all of a sudden, early summer hits, and teams are starting to report for college football, and I start getting some phone calls and some emails. And they are from national media folks. Hey, what have you heard about Russell Wilson? Is he thinking about coming back to football? Hey, I had someone tell me that Russell Wilson may be thinking about going to play at Auburn. What do you know there? And so I'm getting bombarded by all of these different media outlets, and this is my first year in it. And so I'm trying to be as careful as possible. I don't want to put Russell in a bad spot, because ultimately my job as the media relations director of the tourists is not only to help provide coverage for the tourists, but to protect our players from anything. So that was something that was very educational for me early on. Russell Wilson ended up going back to college. He went and played a year at Wisconsin and then was drafted by the Seahawks, I mean, late third round. But I'll never forget, he was literally here in the clubhouse one day, and all of a sudden, the very next day, we're all on the bus headed on a road trip, and we turn on the TV, and there's Russell Wilson on College Football Live on TV talking about his commitment to Wisconsin. And, you know, he was very upfront with the coaches about it, but as a media relations director, that was a learning experience. It's very important to have a good relationship with the local media, because, like I said, ultimately your job as the director of media relations is to make sure that members of the media can cover your organization in a positive and easy way. So the less work they have to do, the better. It means they are more likely to give you coverage. So setting up interviews, making sure all of our press releases and game stories, feature pieces, whatever we want out gets in the right hands. And then there are going to be a lot of media requests, whether it's interviewing a player, a coach, or you know, wanting to come and shoot highlights of batting practice. Whatever the request is, you have to be available, and you have to have a plan in place for it. And so that's something that I've certainly enjoyed learning on the job, and I say more growing in that department. And it's certainly been a nice compliment to being able to broadcast the games as well.
So we've hinted at broadcasting, media relations. That is your official title, Director of Broadcast and Media Relations. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the home schedule is different than a road schedule. Sure. In terms of trying to work on the road. There's 140 games mm-hmm. in the tourist season, you know, 70 and 70. How do you do the same job duties on the road? Because I know sometimes when I have to travel, not having that familiar setup of, oh, this is where my pencils are on my desk and this sure. and that, it kind of throws you off a little bit. But how do you manage on the road especially?
Yeah, it is a little bit of an adjustment when you go on the road. Fortunately, with baseball, when we do go on a road trip, we are playing multiple games in the same city. So whether it's a three-game series or a four-game series, if game one seems to be a little bit difficult setting up or knowing where to look, and you don't have a whole lot of time to, you know, find the opposing cleanup hitters' batting average with scoring runners in scoring position, you know. So just knowing what to do, the fact that you do play multiple games gives you a little bit of time to acclimate to the new environment. But also another piece that really helps when you go on the road is the home team's broadcaster or media relations director. I try and be very accessible to all of the road broadcasters who come here. I make sure they have everything they need. I make sure their equipment is set up and working before the game starts. They have all their stats, their game notes are printed out, and their internet connection works. So everything that I feel like I might run into trouble with on the road, I will go over with someone who comes here to make sure that they have that available to them. And most everyone around the league is the same way. They're They're all very good. As far as the day-to-day goes, when it comes to a home game versus a road game, that, in my opinion, is the real difference. When we're playing here at home, we're here at the ballpark at 8:39 in the morning. If there's rain in the forecast, we're here before 8, just in case we have to throw the tarp on. And then most of the games don't start till 7 o'clock at night, so we're leaving close to 11 o'clock midnight. For me, I'm one of the last people to leave here every night. So it's a very long day, and you do that over and over and over. Whereas on the road, you have a little bit more time to kind of process some things. You don't necessarily have to be at the ballpark that early. I get on the bus when the team gets on the bus. I go to the gym when the team goes to the gym. The team's out there taking batting practice. I'm not necessarily worried about setting up the front gates or making sure that we have everything stocked in certain places, because it's not our ballpark. Other people are doing that. So it gives me a chance to catch up with clients, maybe start thinking about putting an interest piece together on one of our players. So it does give you a little bit more time to accomplish some things when you're on the road. But at the same time, bus trips can be tiring. It's a lifestyle, and you adjust to it, and it ends up, the more you do it, the season just goes faster and the road trips are shorter, and you're happy to be home.
And talking about home events, I think that's an interesting thing, because I don't think a lot of people understand, unless you've been around a team for a while or you know the person kind of in charge of it, that it's not just, oh, I see them in the press box for 2 hours, so that's probably all they've done. No, we're putting in plenty of hours before, plenty of hours afterward, and then you think of all the post-game stuff you have to do, writing the recaps, updating statistics, making sure everything's updated for the next game, et cetera, et cetera. It's, like you said, it is a lifestyle, and when you do adjust to it, it's fascinating how quick time flies, because right now we're recording this on October 4th. It feels just like yesterday. It was the last week of August, yeah. And we're getting stuff ready for Mars Hill action. Absolutely. So I want to touch on this briefly, and then we'll kind of talk about how you came into contact with Mars Hill. But mm-hmm. you mentioned Russell Wilson mm-hmm. earlier on. If you come to McCormick Field, all throughout the stadium, you see a who's who of who've played professional baseball at the highest level. And McCormick Field has just such a history to it. Can you talk about what it's like to see these players in one of their earliest developmental stages, and then a couple years down the line, you see them out in Colorado and, on primetime TV?
Yeah, it's pretty neat, that's for sure. My very first year, our third baseman was Nolan Arenado, who is now arguably top five player in the major leagues. He's won 4 or 5 consecutive Gold Glove Awards. He's a candidate for the Silver Slugger in the National League every year. But the defense is really what stood out to me when he was here. And everyone thinks of Nolan Arenado as maybe the best defensive third baseman to ever play the game. When he was here in Asheville, that was the weakness of his game. He could hit. He had power. He had a good arm. But defensively, he struggled. And so he turned his biggest weakness into his biggest strength. And once the rest of his game continued to develop like you would expect it would, he became one of the best players in baseball. So it's a pretty cool story when you can look at some guys at this level, and then, 3, 4, 5, sometimes even 10 years down the road, you look at the player that they've become, and that they were working on certain aspects of their game when they were here, and they've perfected them. And so that's just one example of a guy. But the history of this team, Adam, like you said, you come to the ballpark, you're going to see pictures of Hall of Famers who played here in Asheville. And you're going to see pictures of legends who didn't necessarily play for the Tourists, but played in this ballpark. And the very first game ever in this ballpark was the Asheville Tourists versus the Detroit Tigers back in 1924. Ty Cobb was a center fielder for the Detroit Tigers. Babe Ruth, Jackie Robinson, Lou Gehrig, all these guys came here to McCormick Field to play in one way or another. To have that type of history is cool. And at the same time, you have former tourists who are littered throughout the big leagues and who are retired, who put great careers together. you know, Craig Biggio, this most recent Hall of Fame inductee, who was former tourist back in 1987. But it's almost like if you watch a major league game today, no matter what two teams are playing, you can find one guy on the field. You can say, hey, that's a former tourist. I was watching the wild card game last night between the Cardinals and the Braves. And the leadoff hitter for the Cardinals is Dexter Fowler. And he's a former tourist. Fans loved him here. And so it's every game where you are seeing someone who has a tie to Asheville, and you know that you have some sort of a connection with him. And you can even go into other sports with Russell Wilson. He's out there every Sunday. And he has a place in Asheville tourist history. So that's, I guess, one of the perks of being around for a very long time and having such a historical venue to play in. But when you personally feel a connection, I think that makes it a little bit more special.
And that is the thing. When you walk into this ballpark, it's not just, oh, hey, we're at a baseball stadium. There's a different aura around it. You feel the history. Yeah. I think that's what makes all these games so exciting. And again, it's been a thrill to be here the last 2 years and, you know, potentially see some future legends
yeah.
in the last 2 years.
So. I would think so. I mean, you know, one of the things about working in minor league baseball, I know we touched on this a little bit earlier, is, you know, it's a grind. And I know you have to deal with that, too. You have 22 sports. I have one to deal
right,
with here.
Right.
Well, and you include Mars Hill. You know, I do some football and basketball. But as far as every day goes, it's one sport. You've got 22 of them. I remember my first year in baseball, I interned with the Princeton Rays, which is a rookie-level team, even smaller level than where the tourists are. We had 15 interns. Of those 15 interns, I'm the only one still working in minor league baseball. And they're 14 are all out. You might think, well, they must not like sports or, you know, they may have better job opportunities, and that's possible. But the reality is it's such a grind that it's hard to work year after year in this industry. And I was able to learn the ins and the outs of minor league baseball with that first internship. But I pride myself on my work ethic. And I think that work ethic is what's allowed me to be the last one standing of that group, still working in this type of an industry. And like I said, it's fun. It's what I want to do. And I'm willing to put the work in to do it. So it pays off.
And, you know, just on my end, we appreciate the work ethic, especially coming out to do our Mars Hill football games,
oh, yeah.
our basketball games. If you wouldn't mind just talking about how that relationship came to be, it's going on, this is starting your third year
it
with
is.
Mars Hill. So, hey, same here as well. So let's talk about how that relationship started with Mars Hill.
Absolutely. Well, we had a former box office manager who worked here with the tourists, and he actually did an internship in Princeton, just like I did. A few years before I was there, named Patrick Spence. And Patrick is a huge Mars Hill supporter. You know, he went to school there, and you know, he has not only a tie to the school, but a very strong tie to the school, to where he cares about them. And seeing that in Patrick every day led me to believe there's something special at this university. So a couple of years ago, Coach Riggins came up to me, and he approached me about calling some football and basketball games for him. And I thought, wow, what a great opportunity. I mean, I love college basketball. That's my number one passion. I love college football, and it's an opportunity to do it at the top level of college football in this area. Without a doubt, and not just gain some experience on my end, but at the same time bring a level of professionalism to a university that deserves it, that should have it. And so I was very excited when Coach came up to me with that opportunity, and you guys couldn't have been better to set everything up, and the quality of play is outstanding. I'm really looking forward to seeing the two basketball teams, the men's and the women's team, this year. I think it's going to be a huge improvement. And And so that connection is a prideful one for me. I'm very excited when people ask me, "What do you do in the baseball off season?" So I still work at the ballpark, but now I'm able to go work at Mars Hill as well, and I can't wait to tell people that. So I give them the information to listen. I say, "You got to check this out." You know, they've got the Lion Sports Network, and you know, to have that as a part of my broadcasting realm at this point in my career couldn't be a better situation for me. So I'm excited to do it, and hopefully I'll be able to do it for a few more years as well.
Well, we certainly appreciate you coming on board, and and we definitely want you on board for as many years as we can get you. So I feel like we could probably keep talking for hours here about the history of baseball and sports and broadcasting, et cetera. But I feel like probably taking up a bit of your time here.
Well, so. Tell you what, I'll give you one more story.
All right. We got one more story.
And this is what ultimately led me to say, okay, it's broadcasting has been my dream, but now I'm going for it. I want to do it. And there was a broadcaster in Indianapolis for the AAA Indianapolis Indians. He's still there. His name's Howard Kelman. Very nice guy. He's a professional. He's been doing it a long time. I remember I met with him after college and sat down with him, and I asked him about broadcasting. I said, "What's let you stay in this game so long?" And he says to me, he says, "Some of the stories that I'm able to see and hear, they make it all worth it." I said, "Well, give me an example." So Howard Kelman says, "Okay, I'm not going to tell you the guy's name." He says, "We had a player play for us, and we'll call him John. So John is playing, and he goes to the ballpark. He has a bad game, 0-for-4, a couple strikeouts, not a very good game. He ends up going to kind of drink away his sorrows for the night. So he's out, he's drinking, and he spots a woman at the other end of the bar, and he goes, he talks to the woman, and they're having some, you know, pleasantries, conversations, and the woman says to the baseball player, Johnny, he says, do you want to get out of here? And so he says, yeah, sure. So they leave the bar, and he says to the woman, he says, where would you like to go? And she says, well, I'd like to go to midnight mass. And player John says, okay, let's go to midnight mass. So they go to midnight mass, and then he shows up to the ballpark the next day. And he's hitting in the leadoff spot, walks up to the plate. He's feeling okay. He says, you know, yesterday's behind me completely. I'm ready to have a good game. And first pitch comes in, and it's right down the middle, and he knows it. He says, this is my pitch. And he goes to swing, and at the last second, he holds up, and he closes his eyes, and he thinks, ah, I should have swung at that. That was my pitch, right in the catcher's mitt. Part of the plate, and the umpire says, ball one. And he couldn't believe it. He said, wait, what's going on here? So he turns and he looks at the umpire, and he says to the umpire, thank you. Thanks, ump. I appreciate that. And the umpire takes his mask off and looks at him. He says, no, thank you, John, for taking my daughter to midnight mass last night. And he's got this big smile on his face. And I'm thinking to myself, like, that is such a good story to be able to be a part of that. And I said, how can I not want to do that? And so I haven't necessarily had that type of an experience with some of our players, but I've had some similar ones, some funny ones, some memories that'll last forever. And I'm glad that he told me that story, because it just ensured that I wanted to do that. And now I'm able to do it for multiple sports, and not just the tourists, but for Marcel as well.
Oh, that's excellent. We'll have to get together again and just tell stories. We'll have to have just a story
Let's
time
do
podcast
it. Let's
at
do
some
it.
Point. Absolutely. Doug, thank you so much for taking the time. I truly do appreciate it. And we at Mars Hill do thank you so much for what you bring to the table and the excellent broadcasting that you've brought for these last 3 years and the several to come afterwards. So thank you so much, Doug. Again, truly appreciate it.
You bet, Adam. Thanks for having me.